You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them, you give your health for them, and this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Catrol Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
For those who whine that the powers that be are just too powerful, so there's no use even bothering with battling the bastards, take note and take heart in not one, not two, but three big court victories by grassroots battlers. First up is a coalition of environmental and citizen groups in the West Virginia area that has been battling the coal industry giants. For years, these groups have been trying to stop the industry from using a devastating, disgusting, and just plain dumb mining practice called mountaintop removal. Instead of tunneling into the mountains to get at the coal, the corporations simply blow up the top third of the mountains, shove the rubble into valleys and streams below, then scoop out the coal. Not only is this unbelievably destructive, but thanks to the coalition's determined push, a federal judge has now ruled that the permitting process that rubber stamps this abomination is illegal. Next, a never-say-die coalition of environmental groups and Nevada officials have stunned the nuclear power giants who had concocted a cockamamie scheme to bury all of America's high-level nuclear waste in Nevada's Yucca Mountain. The cockamamie part is that this is an earthquake zone. The standards for protecting the public from long-term radiation leaks are absurdly inadequate, and the hot stuff would be hauled for years on trucks and trains running right through our population centers. Now, a federal appeals court has ruled in favor of the coalition, at least slowing this corporate rush to nuclear-powered insanity. Third, a coalition of community radio broadcasters and citizen groups took on the media giants that had gotten lapdog regulators to allow the giants to grow ever larger, shrinking media competition, diversity, and our democracy. But now, a federal appeals court has ruled against the media Goliaths in favor of the local Davids. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect with all three of these fights, go to my website, jimhightower.com.
38%. 46%. 42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th of August, 2004. 81 days to regime change. You know, many people suggest Friday the 13th actually was originally a lucky day. There's a whole long story behind that, which we'll get into some other time when it's appropriate for long stories. But it's always been a good day for me. I like it. So I'm very pleased. It's a rainy day here in the People's Republic of Vermont, but still, you know, a marvelous day. It's Friday, the first hour of our program. A time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in over 40 years. He has since been reelected five times. He's the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. I think of Bernie Sanders as America's congressman, and in many regards. I mean, he's representing the interests of working people all across the country. He travels around the country talking about these issues. And not being a Republican or a Democrat, I think he's the guy that's on our side. And so, Bernie, I'm honored to have you on the program again.
Tom, good to be with you.
The Congressional Budget Office. Oh, and let me tell our listeners, first of all, our website, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into the chat room, it's already filling up. If you participate that way, if you'd like to participate by calling into the program, our number 1-866. It's a new one of these newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894, and I know Congressman Sanders loves to take your calls and your questions, so, you know, feel free, and that's it, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, the Congressional Budget Office just came out with a report on tax cuts. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, what they did is analyze Bush's tax cuts, and what they discovered is that the one-third of Bush's tax cuts go to the richest 1% of Americans, and those folks have an average income of $1.2 million. That's the average. So the point is that at a time when the middle class is shrinking, at a time when people are working under incredible pressure to try to bring home enough money to take care of their family, what Bush has done is rewarded his wealthy campaign contributors big time. One-third of all of those tax breaks go to people with an average of $1.2 million. And meanwhile, as a result of that, of course, the national deficit is soaring. The national debt is now over $7 trillion. So we give tax breaks to people who don't need it, and the result is that our kids and grandchildren are going to have to pay for those tax breaks. And meanwhile, all of the talk about how these tax breaks, giving huge tax breaks to the rich, trickle-down theory, going to stimulate the economy, well, it ain't stimulated. The last report, the last jobs report was pathetic, 32,000 new jobs, doesn't even keep up with population growth. And equally important, and this is a point that we have to stay on over and over and over again, is that most of the new jobs that are being created, not all, but most of the new jobs that are being created are paying people low wages with minimal benefits. We are losing good-paying jobs. We are replacing them with lower-paying jobs, and that is why the middle class is shrinking. And that's the it seems to me, an issue that we just have to stay focused on.
Yeah, well said. Bernie, the con answer to all that, of course, is, well, rich people make jobs. They own factories. They own businesses. If we give them a lot of money, then it'll trickle down. Or I remember back about 4 or 5 years ago hearing Limbaugh going on and on about, well, yeah, they're going to buy yachts. But you know how many people are employed making yachts? What's your response to that?
Well, the irony is, of course, that some of these wealthy people and their corporations are creating jobs. The only problem is they're not creating jobs in the United States of America. They're creating a whole lot of jobs in China and India and Mexico, but not in America. I think the evidence is so overwhelming, it's almost a waste of time to have to repeat it, that when you build affordable housing, for example, when you put money into public education and into health care, you in fact create decent-paying jobs that our communities need, rather than giving tax breaks, A, to people who are already so rich that in many cases they're not going to spend the money, and B, for these corporations who receive hundreds of billions of dollars in corporate tax breaks and other types of public subsidies. Increasingly, these guys are running abroad to China and elsewhere. I should tell you, Tom, that just before Congress recessed, I was able to introduce an amendment which passed the House. Now we're going to fight to make sure it passes the Senate, that says to these expatriate corporations, these companies that set up post office box offices in Bermuda and the Cayman Islands in order to dodge American taxes, what we did say to them is that if you are going to do that, you're not going to be getting your corporate welfare from the taxpayers of this country. If you don't feel like contributing to the tax coffers, you're damn well not going to get federal subsidies. And we did pass that by a good vote.
Yeah, but Halliburton is one of those companies. I mean, do you really think that the president's going to sign that into law?
We'll see. I mean, it's an election year, and, you know, there's a lot of sentiment for folks to go back home and tell folks that they're standing up for the right thing. But we did pass it. It was specifically applicable to the Export-Import Bank, which is a disaster unto itself, along with the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. A lot of people don't know these agencies, but these agencies provide billions of dollars in help to large corporations, and many of the very same companies that benefit from it are precisely the companies that are outsourcing or running away to other countries in order to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. So it's an issue my office is paying a lot of attention to.
Yeah, and doing a great job with. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you have a call or comment for Congressman Bernie Sanders, who's on with us the first hour of every Friday, our Brunch with Bernie segment. 13 minutes past the hour, and Tony in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Long time, always listening.
Well, thank you.
My question to you, Mr. Sanders, thank you for your service to your country, is will Kerry talk about these so-called new revelations by the CBC, I think the Congressional Budget Office, yes, and also will he somehow say this, do these vital information that needs to be given to the broader, to the nation, when he gives his one-on-one, when they do those presidential campaign speeches. I mean, that's not only the speeches, but when they do the
the debates?
Debates, correct. I'm sorry, yes.
Okay,
the debates.
Good
and
question, Tony.
Final.
I think, let me be very frank. I am strongly supporting Kerry, but I'm not going to tell you that at this point Kerry is standing up and fighting for all the issues that working people need to hear. My main concern in this campaign is that I happen to believe that George Bush is the most right-wing extremist president, perhaps in the history of this country, and that as bad as the past 4 years have been in terms of an assault on the middle class and working families, on his doing nothing on health care, terrible environmental record, the war in Iraq, et cetera, I fear very much, if you can believe it, that the next 4 years could even be worse. So I'm supporting Kerry, not because I think he is, the greatest gift to humanity, but because at least there will be an opening for us to begin to move forward on some progressive issues. In terms of the CBO report, I'm sure that Kerry will be talking about this one. This is consistent with what he has been saying. What he has been saying is, yeah, I, John Kerry, support tax breaks, but they should be targeted to the middle class, and I think he's right on that, and not to the very wealthy. So if anything, this CBO report confirms exactly what Kerry has been saying, is that a huge amount of these tax breaks went to people who don't need it, and instead we should be making sure that the middle class and working families get the help rather than millionaires.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, Tony. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Sly in Arcata, California on the line.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Bernie. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. My issue concerns the Pakistan connection, and it concerns Lieutenant General Mahmoud Ahmed, who was around the time of the September 11th attacks, was the head of the Pakistani ISI, their secret service. And it turned out, according to the Times of India report that came out on October 9th of 2001, that Lieutenant General Ahmed had given money, $100,000, to Muhammad Atta. Well, during the week prior to September 11th, he was meeting with George Tenet, Colin Powell, basically the highest levels of our government and national security apparatus. On the day of September 11th, General Ahmed was meeting with Porter Goss, Bob Graham, and John Kyle. So it obviously raises a lot of questions as to how our national security apparatus was breached and just what's really going on with all this.
Well, and since then, Musharraf has quietly gotten rid of this guy or moved him out of power, right?
He did, yeah. He's under house arrest, apparently, in Pakistan. And the pretext was that he was too close to the Taliban, which would be putting it mildly, I suppose.
Yeah. Your thoughts on this, Bernie?
Not a lot more than Sly has indicated. It's obviously something that we have to take a hard, very hard look at. It goes without saying we need fundamental reform of our own in intelligence agencies. Pakistan is a fairly unstable country. What comes to my mind when I hear the word Pakistan is a poll that was done a few years ago, Tom, you may have seen it, in which two-thirds of the people in Pakistan indicated that they looked favorably upon Osama bin Laden, and about 6% looked favorably on George Bush.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, clearly we are going to have to do our best to support democracy, educational opportunity in countries like Pakistan, give people hope, make sure that governments there are honest, not pro-terrorist. There's an enormous amount of work to be done in that area.
Yeah, well said. I wonder when we're going, and thanks for the call, Sly. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I wonder, Bernie, when we're going to learn the lesson that many of these groups that have been labeled as terrorists, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, learned a long time ago, which is if you build hospitals and schools and heal people and teach people and feed people, they will give you their loyalty. And
right.
And if you bomb them,
you
they're not. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very important point. People have got to appreciate how desperately poor folks are in the developing world. Children are dying of curable diseases. People have no health care. They have no education. And the United States, along, and not just the United States, the industrialized world, the first world, has got to be a beacon of hope for these people. And we, instead of supporting them only militarily, and so forth, we have got to make sure that people see an improvement in their standard of living and have faith that the United States is on their side as opposed to Osama bin Laden and friends being on their side.
Right. Speaking of the war on terror, and we've got about a minute before the break here, Bernie, the Bush administration's FDA just issued a terror alert.
I mean, this is incredible. You know, this is incredible. The difficulty is terrorism is a serious problem. There could be, God forbid, another attack against the United States. But I am getting tired to the degree to which the Bush administration is using this for political advantage. Now, here we are. Some of us have been working very hard to substantially lower the cost of prescription drugs by allowing pharmacists and distributors and individuals to purchase safe FDA prescription drugs from Canada or other countries. We passed a major bill in the House. We have the votes in the Senate. Governors, mayors all over the country are moving in this direction. And what does the new director of the FDA have to tell us? They think that terrorists want to poison medicine coming from Canada. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. And then the Department of Homeland Security comes along and says, oh, we didn't know about that.
Yeah, we don't have any evidence to indicate this. Just coincidentally, as a vote comes up in the Senate, this is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And you know what's bad about that? It's bad.
I've got to ask you to hold right there, and you can pick that up on the other side. 20 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't I? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
Oh, that's a fine idea. Stand up for your rights. Stand up for your Stand up for your beliefs and convictions. Get politically active. Show up November 2nd at the very least. But there's so much more we can all do between now and then. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to speak with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment Friday afternoon. Friday the 13th today. John in San Diego, California on the line. John, you're on the air with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom. I want to really quickly, I just read your book, What Would Jefferson Do? Highly recommend it.
Well, thank you.
And the constitutionality of it all brings me to the question of how can the executive office write these executive orders that we hear about? Doesn't that circumvent the Constitution and congressional oversight, and what can we do about it?
Well, that's a good question. Bernie, your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that gets back to what can we do about every other problem facing this country, and that is, for a start, get rid of the folks who are in the White House right now and change the leadership in the House and the Senate. Get involved in politics so that government starts representing all of the people economically and constitutionally. Yeah. One of the issues that people, I think, are increasingly aware of is the Republican abuse of power. It's not just that they kept the voting rolls in the House open for 3 hours to pass the Medicare prescription bill, 3 hours after it was supposed to close. Not just that they kept it open 21 minutes to defeat an amendment that I brought, which would take away an onerous section of the USA Patriot Act, but just before Congress recessed for the August break, these guys passed, in terms of the DOMA, so-called Defense of Marriage Act, they passed a bill which said that the United States Supreme Court could not review the constitutionality of what they were doing. In other words, they've taken the federal courts out of reviewing the constitutionality of legislation being passed, which was an incredibly unconstitutional act, which in fact will be thrown out by the courts. But it's these guys are not great respecters of the U.S. Constitution or of civil liberties or of civil rights. Yeah. That's the simple truth of it.
Bernie, specific to John's question, aren't a lot of the executive orders that the president has the authority to sign, for example, in the environmental area, he'll just, you know, he'll create an executive order and do something that might be opposite what the EPA is recommending or whatever. Doesn't most of his authority in most of those areas come from the way Congress wrote the enabling the rules that made those institutions that brought the EPA into existence, for example? I mean, basically,
the answer,
and so shouldn't Congress be fixing this?
The answer is yes. Yeah. But who's going to do it? Do you think Tom DeLay is going to stand up and say, Mr. President, you've exerted your authority? Do you think John Ashcroft is going to do it?
Right.
What people have got to perceive now, and this is what is very dangerous, a very dangerous situation. Not only do you have an extreme right-wing president, but we have right-wing leadership in the House and in the Senate, and you have a conservative Supreme Court. Where's the check?
Yeah.
So, who's going to hold these guys accountable? That's the problem.
So it's just as important, and perhaps to John's question, even more important, to work to get at least the House, where spending originates, and ideally the House and the Senate, elected, get the Republican Party out of office in both these places.
Absolutely.
Until they get their bearings back, you know.
You have three of the main institutions of government, White House, Senate, and House, that are under right-wing leadership, and there really are no checks on what these guys were doing. What I was suggesting about that DOMA piece of legislation, they are now saying that we can do anything with a majority in the House. We don't have to worry about whether it's constitutional.
Yeah,
that's pretty scary.
Yeah, it is. John, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And good to hear from you. I mean, this is and if the Republican Party was behaving like it had under Eisenhower, I don't think that this would be such a crisis, would it, Bernie? I mean, isn't
that's the point. Tom, and that's the point. I'm not here to suggest by any means, any stretch of the imagination, you know, that every Republican in America is an extreme right-winger and a terrible person that doesn't believe in the Constitution. That's absolutely not the case. In fact, I have a lot of friends who are conservatives. Not my point of view, but there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But what you got in the White House now are not conservatives. These are right-wing extremists who are working day and night to undo many of the institutions.
Right, and they represent
that have made our country the great country that it is.
And they represent a threat to America. Bottom line, 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them, you give your health for them, and this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Cattrall Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
With you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, pacify you.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. The only independent member of the House of Representatives on our program today, as he is every Friday, our Brunch with Bernie segment, the first hour of our three-hour program. And 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan, suburban Grand Rapids there. Hey, Alfred, what's up?
Unless we've got a lot of rain, we've moved towards Detroit.
Yeah, almost.
I'm calling about something that's troubled me for some time, our national mental health. And I recently read an article at Time Magazine mentioning about the veterans, and CBS had something on that. But I read a book recently, Britain's forging the nation, 1707 to 1837. And, of course, losing the colonies was to the Britain like our defeat in Vietnam. But the important thing was that from 1793 to 1815, when they were fighting France, the cost to the British people was three times the cost of all other major wars. Britain had fought since their Glorious Revolution in 1688 and six times their pre-war national income. But the important thing that I came across was that William Pitt, who was the younger, who took over in 1783 after they lost the colonies, was prime minister of Britain, except for 3 years, to 1806. And he died under stress, drinking as a result of the age of 47. And then three prominent Britishmen, a leader of the Whig Party, slit his throat, a prime minister of a prime spokesman for penal reform in 1818, and then Foreign Secretary Lord Castlereagh, who I think was helped Monroe with the doctrine, also slit his throat, committed suicide in 1822. And the author in the history book pointing it out that between 1790 and 1820, the cracking of the upper crust, that 19 MPs committed suicide and 20 lapsed into insanity. So I think the mental stress on military-age people, the dependents, the governing elite, and the country as a whole, I just wonder how long this is going to occur here in our country before we have a national, from sea to sea and coast to coast,
Alfred,
mental breakdown.
I'm not much of an expert on British history, but what I think an issue that is not being paid attention to enough is the just tremendous economic stress that's on the backs of millions and millions and millions of people. People are working incredible hours. They are worried that they're not going to be able to find health care. They can't take vacation time. Our people work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. They are bombarded with all this stuff. Buy this. Personal debt is going up. A lot of stress on people, and there's no question, to my mind at least, that stress gets converted into various types of illnesses.
You know,
so,
Congressman,
we have a lot of physical problems in this country.
I can't believe, according to the Vanity Fair, that George W. Bush, major at Yale, was history. Was it his family's history? What history did he major in? Has anybody ever asked him?
He's apparently clueless.
Okay. Well, your point is well taken. I mean, there's a lot of stress in this country, and I think that relates
it's manifesting itself in many ways, as you say.
Bills.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Alfred, just very quickly, to satisfy my curiosity here, I'm wondering if that book suggested that this very high price that the British paid for trying to maintain empire in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and then, you know, losing the North America, leading to this kind of social breakdown that they saw, if that was the setup for the Great Revolution 1832, which is what essentially, I mean, that's the point at which, from which England or the United Kingdom is considered a democratic nation. That was when, you know, Parliament really took the power from the king. Is there a connection there?
Well, I'll tell you, I've read a couple of books on it. I happen to stumble on it. We have an excellent, excellent library in Wyoming, just beautiful books. And I've got another one coming in King Edward, 1901 to 1910. But it did cause a lot of reforms, and they started allowing the country gentry to come in.
Yeah, okay.
Started getting the new blood. But I'm interested in the one in 1906 that I read through a Galbraith book sometime in the past that mentioned that Lloyd George passed social legislation, which the upper crust, like the ones that support Bush today, were absolutely against. But it's maintained that saved Britain from having a revolution during the 1920s.
Yeah, there you go. And it's
happening. Going in the wrong direction. But you know what, Tom? I have to agree with you. I was talking to some people last night at our association, a condo association meeting, and I just still feel that Bush somehow is going to win this.
Well, time will tell. Time will tell. Alfred, we got to move along, but
okay.
You know, time will tell. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And these digressions in history are fascinating, but they're not so much to the point. Except, Bernie, the big issue. Oh, and by the way, our number, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. We've got a couple open lines right now. Bernie, the kind of meta lesson of all this is that when a nation tries to play empire and lives beyond its means, runs itself into debt, fighting wars, and trying to control resources in distant nations, it creates an internal spiritual, social, cultural rot, which then leads to collapse, and then out of that collapse, hopefully, you know, comes some sort of reformation. Do you think that we're in that cycle right now here in the United States?
Well, I don't know. I can't say that, Tom. But what I just
can I'm thinking of the cost of Iraq,
is,
for example.
Is people, I mean, you know, we talk about stress. Just think about the thousands and thousands of families now that have 40 or 50-year-old people suddenly finding themselves in Iraq.
Yeah.
I'm talking about that as stress for families who never, ever anticipated the members of the National Guard. 55-year-old guys are now fighting in 100-degree weather in Iraq. So economically, militarily, politically, a huge amount of stress in this country. I generally don't think that good things come out of that. I think when people are stressed out and nervous and panicky and fearful, I'm not sure the good things happen.
Yeah, it's not. Although it might reach a crisis point, I frankly think that we're at kind of a crisis point right now. People are looking at George Bush and going, "Whoa, wake up!" You know, and but you know, it's I guess it's a matter of definitions. But I noticed. Porter Goss recently said that he did not want to investigate the outing of Valerie Plame, the CIA agent, but he said if you brought him a blue dress with some DNA on it, he would launch an investigation of that. You work with this guy. He's a member of Congress. What are your thoughts on Porter Goss as head of the CIA?
Well, I think the concern, I mean, he's nobody's fool. He's a smart guy. And he has experience in the area, having worked with the CIA and being head of the Intelligence Committee in the House. The concern is that he is a good Republican, and at this particular moment in history, when there is so much partisanship, when there has been so much concern about the intelligence agencies in recent years, the question is, do you really want a partisan Republican in that position right now? And that would be the main concern.
Yeah, right after we just saw all this intelligence being spun for apparently political purposes and just before the 2002 election with regard to Iraq.
Right, and not to mention that we're in the midst right now of a major political campaign. Is this nomination, in fact, even being used for political purposes? If Bush loses, what does it mean to appoint somebody who's going to be in office for a few months? Is that the appropriate time to do it, et cetera?
Yeah, I noticed they timed the announcement of that to just exactly the same time that Nancy Pelosi was announcing that she was bringing members of Congress back to talk about the 9/11 Commission stuff, and that got completely blown off the front pages by Bush's announcement. These guys are masters of timing.
Everybody who is involved in government and politics does things politically. I mean, there's nothing new about it. But these guys do it virtually all of the time.
Yeah.
And I think there's very little that they do in public policy that is not geared toward political goals.
Yeah, they really seem to believe that the ends justify the means. Let's go to the phones. Linda in Crested Butte, Colorado on the line. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. You're both heroes. I would like to just talk a little bit. The Bush administration pulled out a trial balloon a couple of days ago, bringing something that the Cato Institute has talked about for years, the thought of getting rid of the IRS and bringing in a value-added tax or a national sales tax, which would be highly regressive. Do you think that's going to be something? Kerry talked about the fact it would have to be 26%, but it's something that certainly lets off the upper class. And the other thing that they talked about is, if not that, perhaps just a flat income tax, which also would be disastrous.
Well, Linda, you know, what I meant earlier when I said that this guy is not in the White House is not a conservative. He is an extreme right-winger who works day and night to benefit the very wealthiest people and the largest corporations. So this is a guy who told us that outsourcing is a good thing. Companies should go to China if they can produce products cheaper there. In terms of taxes, what they are able to get away with, and what, of course, they have been doing, is shifting the burden from the middle class, from the very rich and large corporations onto the middle class and working families. What they have going for them is that a whole lot of people in this country don't know very much about taxes. So they get up and say, let's abolish the IRS. Let's abolish all taxes. Isn't that great? Oh, man, that's just fantastic. Everybody should pay the same amount. Isn't that great? Yeah. But your point is exactly right. If you move away from an income tax, which still has some degree of progressivity, and if you're going to bring in the same amount of money, it by definition means that the middle class and working families and poor people are going to pay more. Sales taxes are, as you've indicated, in almost every instance, regressive. Income taxes, if they're progressive, are much fairer. You're based on the ability to pay. So it doesn't surprise me that Bush would want to move in this direction. And then two things happen. Either you lower, continue to lower taxes for the rich, put it on to the middle class, or less revenue comes in, the deficit goes up, and then you have to say, gee, we can't afford to maintain Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Veterans Administration, or federal aid to education. Those are the options out there. So obviously this is a disastrous proposal, and we've got to fight it very, very hard. But we have to do a lot of educating of the American people on the whole issue of taxes. When Bush gets up there and says, let's repeal the so-called death tax, what he forgets to tell people is that the only people in this country who pay it are the richest 2%, and that half of the benefits will go to the richest 0.1%. Less money will be coming in. Middle class will be paying more in taxes. We got a lot of work to do to educate the American people on what taxes are about.
Yeah. Well
Thank
said.
Thank you for your answer. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Linda, for the call. You know, Bernie, in researching what would Jefferson do, I came across a letter in which Jefferson, I forget who he was writing it to, I think it might have been Madison, in which he said that income tax, he was speaking about the different ways taxes could be levied, you know, speculatively, because at that point there was not an income tax. The country was supported by tariffs. And he said if an income tax were to be enacted, it should not apply to persons until their income was sufficient to meet all of what he called their first wants, to supply everything that they needed to live. And progressive taxation.
Many, many areas where the media does a disastrous job, and I think the corporate media does a horrendous job in educating us to participate in democracy. Probably the issue of taxes is the worst.
Yeah.
People know very little bit about our tax system, and based on that lack of knowledge. You know, the folks who run this country, the big money interests, are really able, in a demagogic way, to shift the tax burden back onto the middle class and working families.
Yeah.
And we've got to do a lot of educating about what progressive taxation is about, which I think, when understood, most people support. As Thomas Jefferson said in so many words, mm-hmm. Do you want to raise taxes on the poor, on people who can barely make a day-to-day, or should those people who have ample income be asked to pay based on their income? Most Americans, I think, would say the latter. It's true. If you have more money, you'd be asked to pay a higher percentage of your income. But we do not a very good job in this country in discussing that issue.
And it might be because so many people in the media now, particularly in television, Walter Cronkite made, $35,000 to $70,000 a year during his career at CBS. Now you get these guys on TV. They're millionaires. They're multimillionaires.
That's right.
I mean,
So when they talk about the benefits of Bush's tax proposal, what they're saying is, hey, we are going to get most of the benefits.
Yeah.
And they're supportive
of
it.
TV stars.
That's a very good point.
1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Richard in Durham, North Carolina, on the line.
Hey, Tom and Bernie. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
A character on the TV show The Sopranos a while back was talking to his girlfriend. He said, what are you worried about? We're going to take over the whole world, and it's going to be great. And I think you find that attitude among a lot of people. Now, I guess my question to you guys is, if the poor and the working class people in their country make themselves feel better about having pretty tough lives by buying a used Land Rover or buying a knockoff of a Rolex and having a little conspicuous consumption, and they believe that the way that they will be able to have those things is through globalization or having a global empire at other people's expense, how do you persuade them not to support those policies?
Richard, that's a very good question. And the truth is it's tough to do in 10-second sound bites. You know, you get into very deep issues of, how we lead satisfying lives that we're proud of and how we have good friends and good family and all of that stuff. I think what happens sometimes is when people get beaten down and they get hit over the head and they don't have very much, they latch on to others, in this case maybe the President of the United States. He's a really tough guy. He's going to show the rest of the world you don't mess around with the United States. Meanwhile, I don't have health care for my kids. I can't afford to send my kids to college. I'm working 60 or 70 hours a week, but we're tough. And I think what we need to do is try to develop community all over America where we get our priorities right and not live in fantasy land where we get kicks out of beating up people around the world. Rather, we live at home enjoying our lives and living with a decent standard of living.
Yeah.
But it's a tough issue to address politically, let me tell you.
We need to go back to slogans like, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just.
But, you know, this gets you right into the whole consumerism culture. You know, you turn on television and you're watching in a couple of hours dozens and dozens and dozens of ads. Be this, buy that. Here's a med, you got a headache, take this drug. You know, here's Coca-Cola and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And they're pushing us very, very hard in a certain direction. And sometimes you just got to take a decent, deep, very deep breath.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know, what is important about life?
Yeah. And to become. I mean, they're pushing us to become consumers. Yeah, I agree. Very well said. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's Brunch with Bernie. We've got a couple of callers on the line. We'll pick them up right after this break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively. so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
More united we stand.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. We've got a couple of callers and about 3.5 minutes to get through it, so let's move right along. Joe in Post Falls, Idaho on the line. You're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders, Joe.
Yeah, hey, just wanted to mention with the last caller on the taxation thing.
Mm-hmm.
What would be wrong with, like, a national sales tax? You know, you're
okay.
you're gonna nail illegals, you're gonna nail rich people, poor people, people that cheat on their taxes. You're gonna get everybody, and it seems like
Joe, is that a number of studies have indicated it would be a huge shift of the tax burden from the very wealthy to the middle class. In other words, you go into a store and you buy some clothing, or maybe even buy food if they want to put food as part of the taxes. A millionaire and the working person are going to pay the same percentages in tax. It works very well for the wealthy.
Yeah, so if you got $1 million a year income, Joe, you're not going to spend $1 million. You're going to spend a couple hundred thousand, and you're going to put the rest in investments and then make even more money from those investments. You're going to be paying no taxes on most of your income. Whereas if you're a working person and 100% of your income you spend on stuff you need to live, you're going to be paying 100% of your income is going to be taxed. And that's why it's called a regressive tax. Thanks.
And that's why the folks who like this idea are always the very wealthy and the large corporations. They think this is a good idea because they will pay less in taxes. The middle class will pay more.
There you go. Let's go to Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Glenn, you're live.
Hi. I sit and I get angry when I hear Candy Crowley and these other hacks exploiting Kerry's speeches where he's talking about one thing like treating this war on terrorists more sensitively, meaning negotiate and not act like a bully, and instead it gets turned around as we ought to be squishy liberals and treat the terrorists with kid gloves,
right.
Which is not at all what he said. How do you combat
that's
that?
That's right. And I saw that whole clip, and this is what it wasn't just the commentator on CNN. It was what Cheney has been saying.
Yeah.
What they do is they take things out of context, they take one word, they do a soundbite, and they distort it. And your point is well taken. Clearly, the war against terrorism right now is not going well. As Tom said a little while ago, when you talk about sensitivity, if you like, you got to be sensitive to the fact that there are billions of people in this world who are living on a dollar a day. We got to reach out to those people. We got to change them and make them aware that the United States is on their side. If this means being sensitive, yeah, we should be sensitive.
Yeah, well said. And actually, the word sensitive has been used extensively by Colin Powell, George Bush, Dick Cheney. And this is just, these guys really believe that the ends justify the means, don't they? I mean, isn't that the definition of amorality?
They do, in a lot of ways. So here they take a speech out of context, they use the word, yes, let's be sensitive in our dealings with Osama bin Laden. Yes, we, you know,
yeah.
And that's obviously not what Kerry said.
Yeah, well said. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thank you, Bernie, for being with us today.
Okay, Tom, take care.
And happy Friday the 13th. Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them. You give your health for them. And this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Cattrell Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The League of Women Voters has long been a voice of reason and moderation in American politics. But the leaders of the League recently received a searing blast of raw outrage directed at them, coming from a surprising source, their own members. From all across the country, angry LWV members fired off calls, emails, and several shrieks of horror at the hierarchy, decrying a decision the leaders made last year to endorse the use of paperless electronic voting machines in our elections. Since that endorsement was made, there's been a growing awareness that these corporate-owned and operated computer voting systems are wide open to hackers, manipulations, vote theft, and other problems. Indeed, California authorities have banned the use of machines provided by Diebold, Inc. after finding unauthorized software in them and experiencing malfunctions that jeopardize the outcome of elections this spring. Most alarming is the fact that electronic voting provides no paper record of each ballot cast, so there's no way to track the integrity of the vote in case there are suspicions of tampering or miscounts. As a result, there's been a fast-spreading grassroots rebellion against entrusting our democratic electoral process to the handful of corporations that program and supply these treacherous machines. The demand is that the devices must include a verifiable paper record of every vote cast. The League of Women Voters has now joined this rebellion. At its recent biannual convention, some 800 delegates from its local chapters voted overwhelmingly to rescind their leader's earlier endorsement of paperless voting machines. They passed a resolution demanding voting systems and procedures that are secure, accurate, recountable, and accessible. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a testament to the integrity of grassroots groups like the League that they can inform themselves and correct their course. Now, if only our corporate and political leaders would do the same, maybe we'd get a little integrity back in our electoral process.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. A few minutes past the top of the hour, 7 minutes past the top of the hour. You know, German filmmaker Fritz Kipler. Maybe you never heard of him, but... He's a significant historical figure. He was one of the most effective of Goebbels' propagandists. He made movies for the Nazis throughout the 30s. In 1936, he was made the head of the movie board. I forget the German word, one of those big, long, unpronounceable words. And made a number of movies. Probably one of his most famous was called Campaign in Poland. Fritz Kipler. And Fritz Kipler said, and he actually said this, I mean, it's wrote down as part of the historical record, he said that there are two steps necessary to convince the people of a nation of something that may or may not be true. In other words, the big lie. You want to promote a big lie, there are two things you must do. And it's a very simple process. You just have to do these two things. And if you do these two things, you will always succeed in promoting a big lie, Fritz Kipler said. The first is to reduce an issue to a simple black and white choice that, to quote Kipler, even the most feeble-minded could understand, end quote. The second was to repeat that oversimplification again and again and again and again. If these two steps are followed, he said, people would always believe the big lie.
Very straightforward process. In Kipler's day, the best example of his application of this was the 1940 movie A Campaign in Poland, which argued that the Polish people were suffering under a tyranny. This is before the German invasion. That their leader was a tyrant. They were actually aligning with the Bolsheviks, the communists. This was a tyranny that would someday threaten Germany. And that the German people could either allow this cancer to fester or they could preemptively liberate Poland. Hitler, Kipler said in his movie Campaign in Poland, Hitler took the strong and decisive path. He liberated Poland, even though after the invasion, little evidence was found that Poland represented any real threat whatsoever to the powerful Third Reich. He nonetheless did the right thing. And the movie, which was made in 1940, a couple of years after the so-called liberation of Poland, was Hitler's way of saying that invading Poland was the right thing to do and that, in retrospect, he would have done it again. The big lie technique is alive and well today in the United States of America, and that is one of the most, for me personally, this is one of the most troubling things about this political season. We have been seeing this essentially in writ large, essentially since Lee Atwater made it the system to use back in the 88 campaign when Lee Atwater took over George Herbert Walker Bush's campaign. And the Willie Horton ad against Mike Dukakis. Dukakis had no idea who Willie Horton was. It completely misrepresented Dukakis's position. Didn't matter. Boil something down to black and white and repeat it often enough, and people will believe a lie. And Lee Atwater, on his deathbed, repudiated that. You know, begged people not to continue doing that. He said, in fact, here's what he said. He said, in 1988, I'm quoting Lee Atwater. He said, in 1988, fighting Dukakis, I said that I would strip the bark off that little bastard and make Willie Horton his running mate. I'm sorry for both statements. The first for its naked cruelty. The second because it makes me sound a racist, which I am not. Mostly I'm sorry for the way I thought of other people. Like a good general, I had treated everyone who wasn't with me as against me. The key to the big lie is the black and white, super hyper oversimplification of an issue and the repetition. But there's another aspect of the big lie that Fritz Kepler never spoke about, Goebbels never spoke about, Hitler never spoke about, and that Lee Atwater never really came out and talked about, although he sort of danced around at the end of his life as he was dying of brain cancer. And that is that to engage in the big lie, you have to believe that the end that you're trying to accomplish justifies the means. I mean, Hitler was saying, and I'm telling you, I know Germans to this day who believed him. They may not still believe him, but at the time they believed him. Hitler was saying that he was going to create 1,000 years of peace. He was going to unite Europe and ultimately unite the world so that there would be no more war. And it would be the biblical 1,000 years of peace. He wanted there to be a new Christianity. He claimed he was inspired by Christianity. And that this 1,000 years of peace was such a high ideal. It was such an important thing. It was something that people, you know, for 2,000 years, Christianity had been striving for it. And for 1,000 years before that, Judaism, or several thousand years, all the major religions talked about a world at peace. And Hitler said, you know, that he could create a world at peace. One world. A new world order. Of course, under him. And there were people who listened to that and they said, you know, sounds like a pretty good idea. A world of peace. What a wonderful thing. And our nation is going to lead the charge to make that happen. We must be a very noble people. of very selfless people to want to take this on, to create 1,000 years of peace. See, people, you know, Americans who haven't either lived in Germany or even just read Scherer's book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, which is fascinating, although it's like 600 pages, don't get it, how effective the propaganda was inside Germany. But the key to the big lie that none of these guys talked about out loud, and that Lee Atwater only hinted at, is that you have to be able, you have to be willing to lie in order to accomplish what you believe to be a truth. You have to be willing to do evil in order to accomplish what you believe to be a good. That's the key to the big lie. Niccolo Machiavelli in 1532, I think The Prince was published. 1532, 1535, something like that. Back there in the early 1500s, Niccolo Machiavelli first laid this out in a book called The Prince, his instructions to the prince about how to govern. And in at least a half a dozen different chapters in the book, he offered variations on how to do this, and that the end could justify the means. And once you assume that the end justifies the means, then any means is available to you, including lying, or in the case of Hitler, including mass murder. It is the ultimate slippery slope, the absolute ultimate slippery slope. And we have had no shortage of people warning us about that. Gandhi, Jesus, Buddha, Tolstoy, Tolkien, Hemingway, Kafka. I mean, all the great morality plays. Lord of the Rings is about this. Being corrupted by the force that you're seeking. Darth Vader. He started out as a Jedi Knight. He was going to be a good guy. He was, after all, Luke's father and the student of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Remember this? If you didn't see the movies, now you know. But the dark side of the Force got him because, and if you pay attention carefully, because he thought he could take some shortcuts. He thought that he could get the power of the Force by a means other than the good and appropriate means that was the Force. Now, I know I'm wandering into the area of science fiction here, but there's no shortage of, in reality, in the real world right now, there's no shortage of tin pot dictators around the world who are saying, essentially, that their dictatorial rule is justified, that their murder of their own civilians is justified by the fact that someday they're going to bring democracy to their country. The end justifies the means. And what really, frankly, horrifies me in this election cycle is that the Republican Party and Ralph Nader have both embraced this. The end justifies the means. I have yet to see much of it happening on the Democratic side, which is odd because I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a member of any political party. And those of you who listen regularly know that I take the Democrats apart fairly frequently. And certainly the Democratic Party became very corrupt during, with regard to the war in Vietnam, during Lyndon Johnson's era, the tail end of it. And again, you know, the dark side of the Force got Lyndon. He had to say, I'm not going to run for office again. He wasn't willing, ultimately, to do what Richard Nixon did, to extend the war for a couple of years just to get reelected. This horrible incident with Henry Kissinger that we just learned about as a result of one of the tapes that was transcribed, the White House tapes that was transcribed and released last Sunday. But I'd like you to just consider, you know, Bush, Cheney yesterday, taking, you know, John Kerry used the word sensitive in a speech, Cheney taking it out of context and lying about Kerry's use of it. A couple of days earlier, John Kerry saying, you know, I still would have voted to give the president authority. It was the same way that John McCain, the Republican, voted for every bill that gave Bill Clinton presidential authority to conduct overseas operations, Kosovo and things like that. Not because he believed in what Clinton was going to do with it, but because he believed that the president should have the power so that he could more effectively negotiate. And Kerry laid it out truthfully and honestly, and George Bush then took it and twisted it and distorted it and used it for a soundbite that was played over and over and over again on American news. He lied. The president of the United States and the vice president of the United States in the last 3 days have lied to the American people repeatedly for partisan gain, for the smallest of things. This, in my opinion, is a moral crisis for the United States. And I would like to look, as we go into this hour, at some of these lies and examine, is it really necessary? Do we really have to set aside morality to win? 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. the last hours of ancient sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. What is this here in the chat room? Q12, Carl. I did not have sex with that hurricane. We got a couple of folks in the chat room who are down in Florida, and I guess it's starting to get pretty wild down there. Oh, I see that. And Bill Clinton said that. Oh, okay. And now it makes, sort of makes sense. So, Hopkinton computer tycoon Richard Egan reports the Boston Globe. Actually, this is an Associated Press story. Just happened to be in the Boston Globe. Hopkinton computer tycoon. It's Friday the 13th, folks. I think it's a good day. Richard Egan, the Bush campaign's finance chairman in John Kerry's home state of Massachusetts, has personally contributed the maximum amount by law. Now, just get this for a minute. This is the guy who is the chairman of George Bush for president in Massachusetts. Richard Egan. He's the chairman of George Bush for president. And he gave a campaign contribution to a presidential candidate which was equal to the maximum amount of money you can legally give somebody running for president. Who do you think was the recipient of his largesse? His son and daughter-in-law have each also maxed out. They also gave the maximum amount allowed by law to Ralph Nader. Yep, to Ralph Nader. The co-founder of data storage giant EMC Corp and Bush's former ambassador to Ireland, Egan is legendary in Republican circles for his ability to collect hundreds of thousands in campaign dollars. He's a member of the elite group of Bush fundraisers known as Rangers, those who've raised more than $200,000 for the campaign. His two sons are also Rangers, supporting Ralph Nader. The story doesn't end there, though. I'll fill you in right after this. First, let's go to the lines here. 1-866-889-8894. It's Friday. You can call about anything you want. If you're absolutely welcome to call in. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. First-time caller.
Well,
you're my antidote to Rush Limbaugh.
Thank you.
A little bit off the topic, but I think kind of on it. I've got this theory I wanted to hear what you thought about. This No Child Left Behind thing that has been going on for a while now, I really see it as a vehicle to get religious education, to get vouchers going in America. It's really set up to destroy our public education system as we know it and allow Bush and his cronies to put in vouchers.
Yeah, the tragedy of it, and I'm pretty familiar with this thing because I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school over in New Hampshire and pretty up on education issues. And I also wrote about this in a book, Unequal Protection, and Jim Jeffords, who was a fanatic about education. That was the issue that he left the Republican Party over. His office helped me out with some research on this. And, you know, Ted Kennedy originally had come up with this idea. And the idea was to strengthen public education in the United States, to give more federal resources to public education, and to try to come up with some way of figuring out where those resources should go. So you do some kind of a testing to figure out really, you know, where the funding should go. And what happened was the cons got a hold of this.
And Kennedy now will not go near the bill that he himself sponsored. The cons got a hold of this, and they underfunded it. And you're exactly right. They're using it to destroy public education in the United States, to try to bust up unions and you know, accuse the NEA of everything. And ultimately, the goal is a voucher system where the very wealthy will have very good schools. The very poor will be more or less out of luck. And we're certainly moving in that direction, which will enhance the class stratification of America, because as any good conservative can tell you, I mean, read Russell Kirk's 1953, The Conservative Mind, read William F. Buckley's writings, read any classic conservative writings, society has classes and orders, and there is one class that is more well inclined to ruling than other classes. That's the conservative worldview, and you promote that with education. Mark, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them. You give your health for them. And this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Cattrall Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What a wonderful could be. What a wonderful, wonderful
sort of like Smeagol, you know, is Dick Cheney, George Bush, and Ralph Nader. Are they latter-day Smeagols becoming golems? The co-founder of data storage giant EMC Corp and Bush's former ambassador to Ireland, Egan, is legendary for raising money. Well, this, it turns out, is just the tip of the iceberg. The proverbial tip of the iceberg. No J. Kevin jokes here. Kevin Zeese, who is head of the Nader campaign, VoteNader.org, their website, predicts Nader will end up running in 40 states. This according to an article in yesterday's Chicago Sun-Times. Down from 43 in 2000, Nader's given up on Georgia, Indiana, and Oklahoma. And Zeese said to reporter Lynn Sweet, the Washington bureau chief of the Chicago Sun-Times, please tell those major parties to stay out of our independent campaign. What? Sounds like a reasonable idea, doesn't it? Did you see Citizens for a Sound Economy on The Daily Show the other day? I was surprised that the Daily Show, I forget which one of his people did the skit. But anyhow, that they didn't mention that the Citizens for a Sound Economy is chaired by Dick Armey. Good old Dick Armey, the former GOP majority leader in the House. And they are working to get Nader on the ballot in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Oregon, according to Chris Kinnan, the fellow who was featured on The Daily Show. Last month, the group merged with Empower America, chaired by Jack Kemp, who was Bob Dole's running mate for president in 1996. The fused group is now called Freedom Works, and besides Armey and Kent, the third leader is C. Boyden Gray, who was White House counsel in the administration of George H.W. Bush. And these are the folks that are helping bring you Ralph Nader in your state. In other states, the Portsmouth Herald in New Hampshire reported that Dick Cheney, a GOP consultant, hired workers to gather signatures for Nader's petitions. The Arizona Republic reported that Nader is being represented in his ballot fight by attorney Lisa Hauser, a lawyer for the Arizona Republican Party, who was part of the Bush legal team in the Florida 2000 recount. If anybody from the Nader campaign would like to rebut these charges, our number 1-866-889-8894. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reported that a GOP consultant, Steve Wark, through a group called Choices for America, this in the state of Nevada, a GOP consultant helped Nader qualify for the ballot there. The San Francisco Chronicle analyzed Nader's relatively meager contributions and found that at least $23,000 of contributions of $1,000 or more in his shoestring campaign came from people who also gave to Bush. David Jones, Democratic fundraiser, who is president of the Nader Factor, told the Chicago Sun-Times, it's a substantial help, and in all the targeted states, it is not by accident that the Republicans are doing this. And yet, Kevin Zeese said, please tell those major parties to stay out of our independent campaign. Yeah. Speaking of, we're talking, oh, Ellen Ratner. Hey, wonderful. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hello, hello.
It's
Victoria's been sitting in for me.
Yeah.
I think the big news in Washington and where everybody's just going totally bananas is this Ms. McGreevy thing. Rumor has it that the Republicans are just going to force McGreevy to resign earlier than November.
Yeah.
And obviously the reason for that is because the Democratic Senate president would rather become, I mean, obviously if he becomes governor after November, then he can wait till 2006. Without it, he can't. And obviously they want to avoid an election.
Right. Yeah, the Democrats want to avoid election. The Republicans want to have one. Isn't this really, though, McGreevy's call?
It is McGreevy's call, unless the pressure gets so bad, or this supposed guy that he had the affair with who we gave the job to, really makes it nasty, and the papers and everybody else calls for him to resign, and the Democratic Party perceives it's more dangerous for him to stay in office than it is for him to resign.
Yeah, so that ultimately is what it boils down to, not whether he has the power to make it happen or not.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And Washington, D.C. is all a Twitter about this, eh?
Washington, D.C., they can talk about nothing else.
Really? That's amazing. With all the very serious issues we're facing, is the situation, this ginning up of the war in Iran is for October, is that being discussed at all?
Well, clearly, I don't know about you, if I were to analyze the news for you, I would say there's going to be some kind of October surprise. It's either going to be that they're going to do something with Iran, or Iran is going to, they're going to find some new information about Iran and they're going to get tough on that. They're going to find Osama bin Laden. They're going to pretend they found Osama bin Laden. But this administration is not going to let something just go by the wayside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're what, 92 days? Yeah, 81. I'm sorry, 81 days to regime change here. And it seems that I'm absolutely certain Karl Rove has all 81 of those days on a calendar with an event written, penciled in for each one to grab the headlines.
Well, as you know, they are using Mrs. Bush in a major way. She did three different speeches this week on the whole issue of women's business, women-owned business. They had her going to Florida on early next week. Now, she was going to be doing women's business issues. The hurricane may change it, or she may combine the two, where she, does her, Red Cross help me, or let's help others, and then does her, as she says, W is for women. And that is what they are putting out because she is the best weapon that they feel that they have. One Republican said to me off the record, well, she's the only one that can sell anything.
Yeah. Yeah, W campaigned on compassionate conservative and gave us right-wing crank extremist, and she's the only one who can talk softly in this bunch, it seems.
Right.
I mean, she comported herself well on Larry King Live last night, correcting George when his English got out of line. And oh my! So, any sense that the Code Orange alert is going to be lifted before the Republican National Convention in New York?
Well, that's unclear. Although, as you know, there have been various people who have now taken the Code Orange alerts, and they have, almost on a one-to-one basis, taken a look at when those Code Orange alerts have been called and what kind of events have happened, whether it be the Kerry nomination or anything such as that. And the fact is I doubt whether they're going to take the Code Orange alert before the Republican convention because they want people to be on a high state. But, anything's possible. They're going to look at whatever makes political expediency the best here.
Yeah, we did a show on this either yesterday or the day before with this chart that shows every time Bush's poll ratings dropped more than 4 or 5 points, there was a terror alert. And then his poll ratings would jump back up 6 or 7 points.
Right.
Every single time.
I mean, he's
going
to look presidential. How many times last night in that Larry King interview did he stress leadership?
Yeah.
And also the amount Kerry let him get off the hook on the wearing religion on the sleeve, Afghanistan, and then looking in Afghanistan, he said, now people have freedom of religion. Larry never followed up with the question of Saudi Arabia. Never.
Well, and they don't have freedom of religion in Afghanistan either. We control two cities in the whole country.
Because an army of 50,000 people is run by the defense minister who hates Karzai.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. Ellen, anything else?
As a State Department guy who I know very well said to me, we did Afghanistan on the cheap. We got the warlords to do our work, and we're paying for it dearly.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the people of Afghanistan are paying. Well, we're paying for it in that we have an explosion of heroin in our cities right now.
Absolutely. 50% of the GDP in Afghanistan is from poppies.
Yeah, yeah. No surprise. The largest opium poppy crop in the history of the world last year came out of Afghanistan. This is the Anti-Drug Administration
that's holding
this thing together.
Well, you have a good weekend, Tom.
Amazing. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you for
You're
calling.
Welcome.
Ellen Ratner at the Talk Radio News Service. Always great to hear from you. Our report from Washington, D.C. Thank you, Ellen. And moving right along, actually, let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Richard in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Tom. I got to tweak you a little bit, and I hope you won't feel badly. But I'm reading the Republican Noise Machine right now, David Brock's book.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just outstanding. But about a half hour ago, you were doing exactly what he says that we do. You know, when you mentioned that you're willing to take on Democrats and stress the fact that you're an independent. There's no time for independence right now. This is a time for solidarity. If we're gonna beat this guy. And it just, you know, it's not a question of sacrificing any integrity, in as much as we are, after all, the side that does not have to lie in order to win. That's a stark difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I think that was, I don't think, that is the whole point that I was trying to make with this hour talking about the big lie technique, is that the Republicans are using the big lie literally daily. I mean, literally daily.
You should have heard Rush Limbaugh yesterday going on as though the Swift vote thing were factual in any sense.
Right.
But they believe all that stuff to be true.
Yeah, and it is the big lie. I mean, it's why John O'Neill just sits there with this big, I just ate the canary grin on his face whenever he's on one of these TV shows, because, mm-hmm. Some people might believe this. And, of course, he's laughing all the way to the bank. I mean, number one on Amazon, he's making some good bucks off that book. Not to mention the fact that Richard Mellon Scaife is the one who's publishing it.
You know? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have not seen, and although I'm perfectly willing to have somebody correct me on this, I haven't seen any evidence of the big lie technique being used by the Democrats this year. And I made that point earlier in the program. And although I, as I said, I thought, you know, the last time in a big way that the Democrats were using the big lie was during the Vietnam War and Lyndon Johnson's administration. But it wasn't something that was absolutely epidemic among the Democrats. And I really think that there's some integrity left in the Democratic Party. We just need to infiltrate it, take it over, and bring it back to its senses.
Well, exactly. But there has to be, or else there's no hope for us all, to be honest with you. As far as Laura Bush on business,
yeah.
What does she know about it? What's she got? She's got 1 year experience as a librarian, right? Wouldn't you think that Mrs. Edwards would be a better role model for business people? She's a lawyer. She hung out a shingle, and a law firm is a business.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I was going to say conservatives never let the facts get in the way. That's a cheap shot. The reality is politicians in general very often don't let the facts get in the way, except that, you know, again, I have to say in this campaign, I've been really impressed with the fact that Kerry and Edwards are not getting into the mud with this stuff. They're trying to stay above it. It may kill them in the polls, as it did Michael Dukakis. Who chose not to take on the Willie Horton ad, and you know thought he could just rise above it, and it wiped him out.
Well, but Bill Clinton said you got to take him on.
Yeah,
when he was on the Daily Show.
I agree. You got to hit him and hit him hard. And so you know, well, here I am. I mean, I've been talking about these things every single day.
Sure.
And hopefully others will do it. But I think that this is the real damage that's being done here. I mean, certainly there's the damage to America that's done by another 4 years of a corporatist administration, where our air will get dirtier, our water will be more poisonous, more of us will have cancer. We won't be able to hold responsible the large corporations that harm us because of so-called tort reform. Bloody, bloody, blah. You know, four more wars.
Yeah, this is the most important election of my lifetime.
Yeah, and the stacking of the Supreme Court. I mean,
sure.
there's all that stuff. But I think even worse than all of those things is the morally corrosive message which is being communicated to our young people and to the generations that, frankly, I think that, you know, they pretty much stopped teaching this stuff in school 15, 20 years ago, that there should be morality in politics. And we haven't taught civics in the United States in any big way since the 1970s. And just this whole idea of politics as a calling, of government as part of the commons. The Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Washington, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's no longer an archetype that's out there. And so many people are just into the my team, right or wrong, you know, whatever it takes. And that's the tragedy for America.
Absolutely it is, because whatever happened to what's best for my country.
That's right. And that's not being considered. Richard,
hope
thank you for
on
the
way.
Call. There you go. Keep on working. Thank you, Richard, for the call. Good to hear from you. Spread the word. And thanks for listening there on WTKG. Tom in Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. It's
okay. Just
friend.
A few things. Now, you mentioned about the amount of money the Republicans are giving to Ralph Nader.
Yeah.
How many millions has John Kerry accepted from people have given to George Bush?
I have no idea.
Al Gore accepted almost $50 million from people who contributed to George Bush in 2000.
Oh, sure. You've got large corporate donors who are playing both against
covering their bases. The same thing is happening with Ralph Nader. And also, the big lie. Let's talk about the big lie. You condone an advertisement on your show that lies about Ralph Nader every day.
Well, I don't condone it. I accept it.
So the big lie about Ralph Nader costing Gore the election in 2000 is accepted, but, you know, it's not a big lie.
Okay. Nader got 20,000 votes in New Hampshire. Gore lost by 7,000 votes in New Hampshire. Do you really mean to tell me that you think that more than 7,000 of those 20,000 Nader votes wouldn't have voted for Gore?
I doubt it. Probably about 26% of Nader's votes would have gone to Al Gore.
Yeah. You know, I got a bridge in Brooklyn. I'll sell you for $150.
You know, we see 26% typically go across the board, and it's about the same that would vote for George Bush.
Yeah.
The rest of them probably wouldn't have come out to vote in the down-ticket races.
Tom, I'm really willing to accept your argument that Nader didn't cost Gore the vote. I'm willing to accept it. That's not my point. My point
and
is what may happen
too.
this year.
Before you cut me off here, let me mention this, that Al Gore is the one that brought up Willie Horton against Mike Dukakis in the primary.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Tom, thanks for the call.
Okay.
10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
An ancient civilization that turned to dust holds important lessons for modern society, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Nineveh was a city of gleaming palaces set in the fertile crescent of Mesopotamia, but the capital of the Assyrian Empire crumbled away 4,000 years ago, done in by soil erosion and other environmental problems that destroyed the ancient civilization. Paul Ehrlich sees parallels in our current environmental troubles. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. He says our society is also heading for disaster, but unlike the Assyrians, we should know better.
The rulers of Mesopotamia, of Nineveh, had a lot of pride, a lot of hubris, but they had the justification that they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know that they were ruining their environmental supports. On the other hand, the rulers of the United States have a scientific community, the best in the world, that has been telling them, along with the rest of the world's scientists, in no uncertain terms, that we are destroying our life support systems, and one of the main ways we're doing it is burning too much coal, oil, and natural gas.
Ehrlich says burning fossil fuels could be our undoing because carbon dioxide and other greenhouse pollutants are causing the Earth to overheat. He says the science behind this assertion is rock solid, but people continue to play politics with the issue, and he says we continue to waste our natural wealth like there's no tomorrow.
We're like the profligate child that inherited a vast fortune from the planet, and every year we're writing a bigger check on that fortune, and the politicians are very proud of it, but the scientists are watching what's happening to the balance in the checking account, and the balance is going down ever more rapidly.
Ehrlich, who also wrote the 1968 bestseller The Population Bomb, sees irony in the fact that Nineveh was located in what is now Iraq. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, speaking of the good, the bad, and the ugly, here's the actual story from the Boston Globe, January 20th, 2000. As it happens, it is not true that Gore used Willie Horton in 1988. I'm quoting from the Boston Globe. In a debate with that year's Democratic presidential hopefuls, Gore noted that the Massachusetts practice of letting first-degree murderers take weekend furloughs from prison had freed some killers to commit new crimes. He asked whether Governor Michael Dukakis intended to grant similar furloughs to federal prisoners. That was it. Dick Gephardt, himself a presidential candidate in 1988, said, quote, Al Gore made a legitimate criticism, end quote, in a statement defending Gore from Bradley's charge. He never used Horton's name, never used Horton's image, and never resorted to race baiting. So just to set the record straight, and thanks to the folks in the chat room here for letting me know. Not much slips by you guys. Good job. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kevin in Florida under hurricane watch, right? Kevin, hey, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking the call before I get blown away.
Yeah.
I was calling about what you were talking a little earlier about Kerry responding to the attacks.
Mm-hmm.
They are. It's not getting covered. And I think the Kerry campaign's just not doing a good job of it.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kevin. And half of it is that they're not, they are, you're absolutely right. They are responding, and it's not getting covered. And Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, we got about a minute and a half here left.
Well, just a quick thought on the fact that the Republicans are helping Nader. I wonder if you would agree with me that maybe this is a case, again, where the Democrats aren't being tough or ruthless enough. Why don't they try to help the right-wing third parties,
well,
like the Libertarians and the Constitution
Party. This is my whole point in the first place. What I'm not seeing on the Democratic side, and, you know, again, somebody correct me. Well, yeah, okay, the Democrats are taking money from corporate contributors, as are Nader and as are the Republicans. Everybody's playing that game. But I don't see any Republican organizations out there working for John Kerry the way they are working for Ralph Nader. I mean, this is not, you know, anything for splitting hairs. This is obvious common sense stuff. And really the question is somebody willing to violate their own principles in order to advance their cause? Do they believe that the ends justify the means or not? I think that's the bottom line.
Let's not assume that the Republicans really have principle besides power and cutting taxes.
Well, that's the unfortunate reality. I mean, the Republican Party of Dwight Eisenhower is gone, as far as I can tell.
Oh, I think Eisenhower was the best president of my lifetime.
Yeah, we've got, you know, Olympia Snow and Voinovich left, and that's about it. You know, arguably, to some extent, John McCain, but there just are no real Republicans left. Rick, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good point. Well made. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Oh, Tom Hartman here, in fact, with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them. You give your health for them. And this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Cattrall Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
For those who whine that the powers that be are just too powerful, so there's no use even bothering with battling the bastards, take note and take heart in not one, not two, but three big court victories by grassroots battlers. First up is a coalition of environmental and citizen groups in the West Virginia area that has been battling the coal industry giants. For years, these groups have been trying to stop the industry from using a devastating, disgusting, and just plain dumb mining practice called mountaintop removal. Instead of tunneling into the mountains to get at the coal, the corporations simply blow up the top third of the mountains, shove the rubble into valleys and streams below, then scoop out the coal. Not only is this unbelievably destructive, but thanks to the coalition's determined push, a federal judge has now ruled that the permitting process that rubber stamps this abomination is illegal. Next, a never-say-die coalition of environmental groups and Nevada officials have stunned the nuclear power giants who had concocted a cockamamie scheme to bury all of America's high-level nuclear waste in Nevada's Yucca Mountain. The cockamamie part is that this is an earthquake zone. The standards for protecting the public from long-term radiation leaks are absurdly inadequate, and the hot stuff would be hauled for years on trucks and trains running right through our population centers. Now, a federal appeals court has ruled in favor of the coalition, at least slowing this corporate rush to nuclear-powered insanity. Third, a coalition of community radio broadcasters and citizen groups took on the media giants that had gotten lapdog regulators to allow the giants to grow ever larger, shrinking media competition, diversity, and our democracy. But now, a federal appeals court has ruled against the media Goliaths in favor of the local Davids. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect with all three of these fights, go to my website, jimhightower.com.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes. 27 minutes. From the time the second tower was hit at the World Trade Center by a hijacked aircraft, until the time George Bush finished 7 minutes of children reading My Pet Goat to him, and 20 minutes afterwards for a photo op. 27 minutes before he addressed any of the issues of the country. And then basically what he did is hustled off to his plane and hop, skipped, and jumped around the country, uncertain of where to go. Sort of looked like somebody running with their tail between their legs, frankly. The rationales for the places he went have never come out. Of course, he thought he was a target.
As Edward R. Murrow said, our quote for the day, speaking about Joe McCarthy, no one can terrorize a whole nation unless we are all his accomplices. Bill Mayer in the New York Daily News writes a very thought-provoking piece. He says, the fact that Bush wasted 27 minutes that day, not only the 7 minutes reading to kids, but 20 more at a photo op afterward, was, in my view, the most outrageous thing a president has done since FDR tried to pack the Supreme Court. He says, this is an issue. This isn't partisan. He said, Watergate was outrageous, but it still did not carry the possibility of utter devastation, like a president's freezing at the very moment we needed his ultimate focus on an attack in the United States. This is an issue about the ultimate presidential duty, acting in an emergency. So, what are the response? Well, one of the excuses that the Republicans have put forward, he was gathering his thoughts. Bill Mayer says, this was a moment a president should have imagined 1,000 times. There is no time in the nuclear age for a president to sit like Forrest Gump gathering thoughts after an attack has begun. Gathering information is what he should have been doing. Well, the White House press secretary said, the president felt he should project strength and calm until he could better understand what was happening. Bill Mayer points out, I agree that gaining a better understanding of what was happening would have been a good goal. What I don't get is how that goal was reached by just sitting there instead of getting up and talking to people. Is he psychic? Was he receiving information telepathically? Vice President Cheney said he didn't want to scare the children. And about Kerry, he said, the senator from Massachusetts has given us ample reason to doubt the judgment he brings to vital issues of national security. So, Bill Mayer points out, Kerry's judgment is suspect, but at a moment of national crisis, Bush's judgment was better not to scare 20 children momentarily than to react immediately to an attack on the entire nation. I wish I could remember the name of the military official that I saw on one of the network feeds. This was a few months ago, you know, when Moore's film was getting out there and everybody was seeing those 7 minutes. And this guy was a battlefield commander of high rank. And he said, I've seen that look before. If you saw the look on Bush's eyes, it was a look of terror. And then he sat there and chewed the inside of his lip, the inside of his jaw, the inside of his cheek for the next 7 minutes. Looking up, looking down, looking left to right. Frankly, to me, he looked panicked. As he sat there while the kids read to him and he held a book upside down. And this battlefield commander said, I've seen that look before in war. And when you see that look on someone's face, you get them out of the theater of war because they have frozen and they can cost the lives of people. Well, you know, the reality is George Bush never faced combat, never faced any kind of serious threat. I mean, probably the two most serious threats George Bush faced in his life were when he was convicted of drunk driving and when he was arrested for cocaine possession. And he was able to finesse both of those. Days of community service in Texas for the cocaine possession. Small fine for the drunk driving conviction in Maine. And we don't know what else might have happened because all of his driving records when he became governor of Texas mysteriously vanished. All the records of his entire life in Texas mysteriously vanished. He was issued a new driver's license with a new driver's license number because the records have vanished. We can't find them. They just don't seem to exist. That seems to happen a lot around George W. Happy Friday the 13th to you, by the way. 81 days, regime change. Here we are, Friday the 13th of August, 2004. And what's in the news this week? Well, last Friday, it's a Friday, so let's look back a week, because Fridays are always the days that the Bush administration does things that they don't want anybody to know about, because they figured they'll get, you know, nobody's watching the news Friday night. People are going out to dinner. They're going out to party. They're getting together with their friends. They're passed out from a long week's work, taking a nap. Friday is when they put out the information that they don't want anybody to know about. They've gotten very good at this. And last Friday, as Public Citizen notes, last Friday, George W. Bush quietly appointed major fundraisers as ambassadors to the Bahamas and Estonia, as well as to two positions on the board of directors of the Inter-American Foundation. The four Rangers and Pioneers, the honorary titles given to fundraisers who have collected at least $200,000 or $100,000 respectively for Bush, were among 20 recess appointments announced by the president on July 30th. The Constitution has this provision that if the Senate is not in session and so cannot provide its advice and consent on an appointment, which it's supposed to do, if the Senate is not in session and it's an emergency, you've got to appoint somebody. Terrible things could happen if you don't. Then the president has the authority to appoint somebody until the next year, until the Senate will have a time to appropriately deliberate the issue. So these appointees will serve until the end of 2005. Public Citizen President Joan Claybrook said, "This is business as usual for George W. Bush. Once again, the president has repaid his premier financial backers with plum appointments, and once again, the administration has skirted public and congressional oversight of its activities." Public Citizen was wondering, you know, of these people, of this elite group, this small number of people who have given $100,000, $200,000, or $300,000, the Pioneers, the Rangers, the Pioneers, and the Super Rangers, what kind of payback have they gotten? Well, we know a lot of them are captains of industries that Bush has repaid, opening up public lands to mining, reducing the environmental controls on coal and power plants, opening up national forests to logging, and so forth. But what about the very personal stuff? Well, it turns out one out of every five Bush Pioneers or Rangers has received a presidential appointment. Now, you would think, I mean, 20% of them, you'd think these guys had something better to do with their time, you know, like they're busy making more billions. Well, you know, they've all made their money. And wouldn't it be nice to put the word ambassador after your name for the rest of your life, even if you only serve for a year? Four cabinet secretaries, 29 ambassadors, 173 Rangers and Pioneers altogether. With the 2004 Republican National Convention just a few weeks away, the Bush campaign has already raised $228 million, at least a third of it collected by 525 people, the Rangers and Pioneers. 69 Super Rangers, on top of that, have each brought in $300,000 apiece for the Republican National Committee. That's on top of the $228 million just for the Bush campaign. Frank Clemente of Public Citizens Congress Watch says, "The Ranger and Pioneer program is an enormous patronage system. The wealthy special interests backing the Bush campaign are anticipating ever greater rewards if Bush triumphs in November." There's a great website on this. It's called whitehouseforsale.org. You can check it out. And this weekend, coming up shortly, anyway. Do I have the date here? I'm not sure. It's going to be in the next few days. Oh, no, it's today. The Bush campaign and the Kerry campaign are both in Oregon, in Portland. And here's the contrast. If you want to show up for the Bush campaign, you have to sign a loyalty oath. You have to say that you're willing to have your name published in a newspaper advertisement. You have to show that you're a registered Republican. You have to bring your card. You have to be willing to say, Sieg Heil! No, excuse me, that wasn't right. And if you want to go to the Kerry campaign, all you have to do is show up. You can even heckle Mr. Kerry. It happens regularly. I mean, you can't be too disruptive, right? I mean, but you can hold up your Bush signs. You can boo. Can't do that at a Bush rally. You do that, you will find yourself in jail. And then you get these right-wing commentators on TV. Just look at that crowd. They're going nuts for Bush. They love the president. Hand-picked. It's really rather pathetic, isn't it? That the position, the office of the President of the United States, that we should so respect, would be used in this way. That it would be so horribly politicized. It's a tragedy. I got our Daily Miss lead coming up, and some interesting claims versus facts. Also, if you'd like to call, our number 1-866-889-8894, Friday afternoon. Anything you want to talk about is fine. John F. Kennedy, without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed and no republic can survive. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
If you want it, here it is. Come and get it. Make your mind up fast.
Come and get a new president. I'll line up for that. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Our mislead of the day. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana, on the line. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, what's up? Hey, when you were talking about people not being able to get in to see Bush, NPR on the All Things Considered on, I think, Wednesday or Tuesday, had a whole story about that. There was one guy that was asked if he agreed with Bush's politics, and he said, well, no, not really, but I'd like to hear both sides, both candidates, before they make a decision. And he was told he couldn't go in to see Bush.
Right.
At all. The administration's own people admitted to this kind of a policy.
Yeah, they've changed their spin on this stuff, Sean. What they're saying now is that these are not actually campaign events. These are not actually presentations, where the American people have an opportunity to meet the President of the United States. These are thank you get-togethers so Bush can thank the people who are working so hard on his campaign.
Well, when he was here in Indianapolis, a friend of mine was wearing a Grateful Dead T-shirt. And when he was there, he was given a button-down white shirt to put on. He refused to put it on, and they booted him out.
And they kicked
him. Not only can you not agree with Bush's politics, but you have to look like a systemite, too.
Yeah. It's,
that's just really, really, really bad. Although I must give the Bush administration credit. At least it wasn't a brown shirt with a red band around the arm.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Sinclair Lewis's book that he wrote back in 1934, as I recall, called "It Can't Happen Here." You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
And the candidate for president of the United States campaigned on a platform of family values. I was amazed when the Bush Quail campaign pulled that one out of the hat because it was right out of Sinclair Lewis's book. He wore a coonskin cap. He talked about mom and apple pie, traveled around the country, and he was being promoted by a right-wing radio talk show host. And as soon as this guy became president, he set up concentration camps and started you know, herding people into them. And whenever he spoke, he didn't allow anybody to come into his speeches who didn't completely agree with him.
Now we're getting into the Alex Jones territory.
Yeah, I mean, people need to go back and, you know, study their history or just read the... I mean, this was a major bestseller. Sinclair Lewis was the first novelist, the first fiction writer in the history to win a Nobel Prize for his writing. And,
well, with that kind of stuff going on with the Bush administration, Tom, that right there should tell everybody what this guy is up to.
Yeah.
Why are people just not... I mean, people are just... I can't believe people aren't waking up to this. It's just incredible.
Well, I think they are. By the way, it was a Pulitzer Prize, not a Nobel Prize. But yes, I am seeing an awakening happening around the country. I really am. And what baffles me are these poll numbers. I mean, how can it be that half of Americans haven't seen through this stuff? You almost wonder if there's like, you know, the electronic voting machine rigging folks and the poll rigging folks are the same people or something. There's the wacko conspiracy number 311, but, you know, it's starting to make some sense to me. It's just remarkable.
Well, yeah, last time I was on the phone with you, I brought that up, that maybe the reason why the polls are so close is because when Devol, you know, fixes the election with the electronic voting machines.
Yeah.
We won't be so shocked when he wins.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be shocked no matter what, you know, in every single meaning of the word. Sean, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you there in Indianapolis. It's 29 and a half minutes past the hour. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Chuck in Los Alamos, Rob in Pennsylvania, you're up next. Stick around. We'll be back.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Consumer demand for new technologies has closed the doors of three television glass plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. The two states, already hit hard by job losses, will be adding 1,100 unemployed workers to the rolls. Technoglass, unable to overcome competition from overseas companies and losses due to consumer demand for plasma LCD and projection sets, will close its plants in Columbus and Perrysburg, Ohio, and Pittston, Pennsylvania.
Thousands of coal miners in 42 mines around the country lost their health care on Monday when a federal judge ruled that bankrupt Horizon Natural Resources no longer is required to honor its labor contract obligations to seem more attractive to anti-union potential buyers. Tom Jeter has been a coal miner in southern Illinois for 26 years.
They've dumped us. They're sitting laughing. Fat cats. That's all they are. They don't care about the little man. You give your life for them, you give your health for them, and this is it. This is the thanks you get.
Alarmingly, all Americans are under the threat of a total loss of health care if their employer declares bankruptcy. In 2001, Polaroid awarded its executives millions of dollars before canceling retiree health and life insurance benefits. And now, Delta Airlines is threatening to do the same. And as always, U.S. taxpayers will be expected to pick up the tab. The United Mine Workers of America plans to appeal the decision to U.S. District Court in Lexington.
What does it actually mean to buy American? For one advertising firm, it means a company has at least one product with at least 65% of the total cost of the components, manufacturing, and packaging created within the United States. Milwaukee-based Cattrall Doyle Creative has developed a new logo called We Employ America. The firm touts the logo as recognizing the realities of a global marketplace, where it is a necessity to outsource work to remain competitive. Much like the traditional Made in America logo, the We Employ America is intended to encourage consumers to buy from companies that attempt to keep the majority of their business in the U.S. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Must be the season of the witch. That's amazing. This is the music that I was playing back when I was a DJ in the 60s. And then I got into the news business. Didn't get to listen to the music anymore. I always had, when's the next newscast coming? Because I had to read the news for 7 years. And did a fair amount of reporting on it as well. That was a wonderful time, the late 60s, early 70s, for reporters, because local radio stations actually paid reporters to go out and find stories. Now it's all rip and read. Read the teleprompter, Ralph. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you would like to opine, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, you know, you're probably going to disagree with me on this one, and I hope that you have a really good explanation, but I got a question for you. About, back in 1972, which was the first presidential election that I was eligible to vote in, I worked for Nixon, and, you know, I was 18. Well, 20. And, fundamentally what it came down to was I look back upon all the work that I've done for candidates and all the candidates I voted for and what have you over all those years, and I realized something very interesting. I think I've gotten wiser. I actually think that I've learned something over those 30 years, and I wonder why it is, and this is maybe proportional representation. I don't know what it is. I really don't. But I know that Jefferson and the founders, you know, when they basically agreed that we should elect electors who were supposed to be wiser, I just think to myself that maybe there should be proportional representation as people get older. You know, like maybe you get one vote when you're 18, because I think everybody deserves a vote. But I know darn good and well that I'm in a better position to analyze what I see on Fox News now than I would have been back then.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. You know, Chuck, the original idea of the Electoral College was that the local community, that you in Los Alamos, that me in Montpelier, Vermont, that we would get together and we would look at our own community, just at our own community.
Mm-hmm.
And we would say, okay, who is the person in our own community who has the greatest wisdom and the greatest concern for the future of our nation? And, of course, this was created before there were political parties. So you know, there was a very high level of idealism among that generation, you know, the what Jefferson refers to as the generation of 76.
Right.
And that we would only choose to elect that person. And we would send that person to Washington, D.C., and with the commission to help select the president of the United States, whomever it may be. Whoever they choose, we're going to support, because we believe that they will go to Washington and they'll spend a few days there and they'll do their research and they'll figure it out and they will make the right choice, because they're the wisest person that we have in our community.
And this
was a solution.
And informed.
Yeah. And this was a solution in their minds to the fact that there are people who are without education, there are people who don't know how to read a newspaper, and there are a lot of people who frankly just don't care about politics and don't follow things. And so let's find the wisest person in the community and send them. And when you
you think of it in that context, the Electoral College actually starts to sound kind of appealing. And you know, what if we actually did that? Can you imagine if there weren't national candidates? I mean, there was nobody out there saying, I want to be a national candidate. Or there were hundreds of people saying, I want to be a national candidate. And 600-700 electors were sent, because I think you get one for every congressman and one for every senator. So what is it, 637, as I recall?
Yep, right.
Or 635. And so 600 and some odd electors show up in Washington, D.C., and they deliberate for a few weeks, and they pick a president and a vice president for us.
Well, I mean, let's face it, you know, it's what you say in your book. Jefferson said that a well-informed electorate. But we don't have a well-informed electorate. We have a lied-to electorate.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, I don't see it getting any better. I mean, people turn on the tube, and I talk to people around where I live, and it's just amazing. It's like if it comes down the tube, they believe it.
Yeah. Well, that's the downside, and the upside of having a real Electoral College. I mean, if we actually went back to the Electoral College, and in fact went back to it the way that it was originally created in the Constitution, before the Constitution was amended, so that the first choice of the electors was president and the second choice was vice president, which produced what they considered back then to be the undesirable result. The first election where this was applied was the, you know, after Washington, it was the second president of the United States, and Adams, who was essentially a right-winger, super conservative, got the first number of votes, and Thomas Jefferson, who was essentially a liberal, got the second number of votes, and so they served together, and after that they said, you know, we don't like this, and somewhere in the, I think it was 1803 or 1806.
It was 1803, yeah.
1803, yeah. During Jefferson's term, they amended the Constitution to fix that flaw. I think we should give some discussion to either going back to that or having absolute total, get rid of the Electoral College altogether and just let we the people vote. The problem is what you identified, and that is that in this electronic media age, and particularly with the problem of corporations having, you know, that money is equal to speech, according to the Supreme Court, it is so easy to fool people, it is so easy to lie to people, and any party that is willing to put the ends above the means, or to say that the ends justify the means, has an advantage inherently. And,
well, you're absolutely right, Tom. And I mean, the more I think about it, I think we should start. I mean, it could take your life and the life of my children, but maybe if we start now, we could change things.
Wouldn't it be cool though? I mean, instead of having all the people vote for president, we vote for our senators, we vote for our members of Congress.
Yep.
But if we just had to select somebody in our local community and say, you know, we don't even want, and in fact, even make it kind of a rule. You don't tell us who you're in favor of. We just know you, and we trust your wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, go on.
Well, I mean, you've pointed out many, many times that when you get right down to it, the only way that real populism works is a very local level. And I think that maybe that would do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, as I said, that was the original vision of the founders, and it just never quite worked out. And frankly, I don't think it will. I think that I'm being too idealistic. I think Jefferson and Madison were too idealistic when they put that into the Constitution.
Well, I hate to tell you this because you'll probably never take another phone call from me, but both John Adams and John Quincy Adams are my great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great. I believe people can change over the generations.
I have. I disagree with absolutely everything they ever did.
There you go. Yeah, and my mother, who's D.A.R. and all this stuff, is distantly related to James Madison.
Oh, James Madison.
Yeah. So, but you know, dueling relatives here, for what that's worth. Chuck, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay.
I appreciate it. We got to move along here. 1-866-889-8894. Drake in Allentown, Pennsylvania, is on the line. Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yes. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a while since I've been in Allentown. What's up, Drake?
Okay. I'd like to tell some people about, your people about my campaign. I am running for state representative as an independent candidate for the 131st District.
Okay.
And I'd like to give up my website out and have other independents across the country, if they would like, to network with me.
Okay. That's fine, Drake. I'll let you do that. What's your website?
It's independentgov.com.
independentgov.com.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Independentgov.com.
Okay, great. Drake, thanks a lot for the call, and hopefully you'll get a few hits there. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania, isn't it, Rob?
Yep.
Another Pennsylvania call. Rob's the publisher of opednews.com, one of the better news sites on the Internet. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I was going to tell you about my experience the last couple of days with local politics. And the local, the big news is Jim Greenwood, our local U.S. congressman, put in notice he wasn't going to run again because he was offered an $800,000 job as a lobbyist.
Jeez.
So what happened...
There should be a law, you know?
Pardon me?
There should be a law against that.
Yeah. Well, what happened was... They had, at the last minute, to find a Republican to run against Jenny Schrader, who's the person who was elected in the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
They decided not to have a primary. And what they did was they put together 128 people who were either local elected officials or party hacks to be... to kind of make a decision on who to elect.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sounds like what you were just talking about, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, just because the Republicans do it doesn't mean it's a bad idea.
Well, the funny thing is, there was one guy who kind of drove the whole thing. His name is Harry Fox.
Right.
He's an 80-some-year-old kind of ruler of the Republican Party there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were... three or four guys who really wanted to run. One of them was recommended by Jim Greenwood. Jim Greenwood was not a bad guy as far as Republicans go. I mean, I literally voted for him in the past before I got so disgusted with the delay that I couldn't vote for anybody who would support him anymore. But Greenwood was a very moderate guy who was pro-choice. And so he recommended a guy by the name of Conte who was pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up that these independent, wise members of the community, like you're describing,
well,
went 100% voting for the guy that the boss Tweed of the local Tammany Hall.
Yeah, hang on just a second here, Rob. First of all, these were not independent, wise members of the community selected by all the people in the community. These are a bunch of party hacks who got together and said, you know, we're gonna deal power to ourselves.
Well,
it's just night and day.
Too.
It's just night and day.
It was the elected Republicans in the area too.
Right. So
this is suburban Philadelphia, Bucks County,
right,
which is very Republican.
So it's the people who are part of the corrupt system itself who are deciding how they're going to further corrupt the system. I mean, what a surprise!
It just shows you how one guy can drive everybody, because there's so much pressure because of all the deals. I mean, I've talked to a lot of local Republicans who say they're only Republican because they have to do business with the local county, and it's the only way to get business.
Hmm.
That's why even though Bucks County has more Republicans, 62% of the people in Bucks County voted for Ed Rendell, the Democrat, for governor.
Yeah, so there's nothing new about that. I mean, the same was true in Chicago with the Democrats under the Daley administration and Tammany Hall in New York City. I mean, you know, this is Democrats again. This is an old story, Rob.
Yeah, so but it's looking good. I mean, the energy here in Bucks County is incredible. And from what I hear, for Curry to win Pennsylvania, he needs to win Bucks County, because that's the way Democrats take the state. We kind of turn things around. So what's amazing is the local grassroots activity.
What is the local grassroots activity? I think this is fascinating. I think people need to know about this, know about what people, because particularly I am just really impressed, Rob, because you're a guy who I, you know, I've known you for, what, a couple of decades, or a decade anyway, and I never thought of you as a Democrat. You know, I always thought of you as a liberal independent, you know, as a progressive. And here you are working within the Democratic Party trying to bring about change. Is my characterization relatively accurate?
Well, you're right. I mean, I voted as an independent, not strictly Democrat. It was very rare that I voted a straight ticket, although I probably will this time because I'm so disgusted with the Congress. And I've seen how local politics, where local legislators can gerrymander the districts,
yeah,
for the benefit of national congressional seats, like what happened in Texas and Colorado.
Right, and you know, to give the devil his due, as has happened under Democrats as well, particularly in the South back in the 50s and 60s. But nonetheless, you know, we want to try and get people of good quality in who will change the system as much as, you know, be part of the change instead of being part of the problem. But what are you personally doing?
I started out just going to a couple meetups back when Dean was doing his thing, And then
This is through meetup.com?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I went to a house meeting following the Fahrenheit 9/11 movie, and there were about 50 people there from the community. I met a number of the active political people, people from the Kerry campaign, people from America Coming Together Act.
Were there folks there from the Nader campaign as well?
No.
I wonder why not.
No. There was one student, a girl in her maybe 20 years old, was there late. And, you know, I wanted to be nice to her, but, God, I think that they're idiots.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, nothing personal, folks, if you're a Nader supporter, but, you know, you're voting for George Bush.
Yeah.
You know, black and white. This is the reality.
Okay,
this
so moving along. Let's say you went to this meeting.
So I started doing this thing in Doylestown, which is the county seat, which is near where I live. It's called Run Against Bush. There's a website, runagainstbush.org, for your local group. And people get together, they all put on a T-shirt that says, Run Against Bush, and you go through a high-density area town in a time when there are lots of people out and about, and you basically show that there's a lot of opposition to Bush.
It's like running a marathon.
Well, no, I walk. Most of the people walk. There are some that run, but, you know, the whole idea is you're flooding the streets with people who are political.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
started doing it in
We're
higher...
here, guys. We're here. And we don't
right.
agree with this guy.
You're not alone, guys, because, you know, remember, this is an area that can be high-density Republicans.
Yeah.
Then we started doing it again last Saturday in New Hope, Pennsylvania, which is a tourist town that has thousands of people. And our first time we had 25 people. We usually get about 50 for the Doylestown trip. We expect more the next time. And again, we hand out literature that says a little bit about what we do, a little bit about Kerry, a little bit negative about Bush that we kind of put together. It's working. You know, we're getting a lot of people who are glad to see us there, want to get involved. They don't know what to do. The other thing that I've done is I went to the local township Democrats meeting and said I wanted to help with canvassing, and I went to a training to get on how to canvass, how to knock on people's doors.
That's incredible. Rob, you are a true citizen patriot. I'm really impressed. I am really and truly impressed. And I encourage people to check out your website, opednews.com, for the other work that you do there, and futurehealth.org and all that other stuff. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Transforming the World by Revitalizing American Democracy. Yes, we can. We really can.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
Well, let's hope not.
Four and a half minutes before the hour. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful Friday the 13th. Even Mercury's even retrograde. I guess it's like, you know, everything. So, therefore, we make the best of it, right? Bush ignores his own promises on wetlands, our mislead of the day. This is from misleader.org is the website. Last week, President Bush said he is, quote, working to restore, improve, and protect at least 3 million wetland acres over the next 5 years. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? He's going to improve and protect and restore. Well, maybe improve is the gotcha word. If you put a hotel on something, have you improved it? I'm going to restore, improve, and protect at least 3 million wetland acres over the next 5 years. But according to a new report released today, the Bush administration has actually done the reverse by using a key court ruling to encourage a severe degradation of wetlands throughout the country. As the Washington Post reports, the Bush administration, quote,
has allowed developers to drain thousands of acres of wetlands under a policy adopted last year, end quote. The study, which documents the administration's policy, was conducted by four nonpartisan environmental watchdog groups, and based on documents acquired through the Freedom of Information Act, it found that the Bush administration's interpretation of a 2001 Supreme Court decision has ensured that developers are allowed to run roughshod over previous efforts to protect fragile wetlands. Well, there are those folks, I mean, let's give them their due. There are those folks who believe that if you put a hotel where there used to be a swamp, you have improved it. And, you know, they don't realize that just like the rainforests are the lungs of our planet, the wetlands are the kidneys of our planet. It's how our water gets filtered. Not to mention all the life forms that are there and all that kind of thing. But I mean, just in a purely selfish way. I mean, this is the filtration system of the planet. Yeah, we don't need it. We don't need no stinking environmental stuff. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, Brad for our music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the world on radiopower.org, and Mike Toth for our archives at tomhartman.com, and to Ben Birch for the archives at White Rose Society. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to the folks in our chat room, and to Jay for our music. Thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, or see you next week. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio